for the most entertaining talk anywhere. Stay tuned to LA Talk Radio, your real talk station, your real 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
Listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show. I'm Doug Feller. Since this is Tuesday, I'll be your host. If you were expecting my partner, Rick Franzi, well, we alternate and he usually hosts the Monday show. So each week we invite leading business leaders to join us on the air to discuss what's going on in their business. Much like our executive forums, our goal here is to learn best practices from leaders who are active in the trenches today facing the same issues that we're all dealing with. You know, Rick and I are business owners just like many of you listening today, and we have been creating and facilitating CEO peer groups for 15 years here in Orange County, California, all under the banner of Renaissance Executive Forums. That's www.executiveforums.com. These forums are the opportunity for you to meet with like-minded business executives and work on problems that are common to all businesses today. Let's get right into the show here. Our guest today is Rob Dodson, who's president of Vail Dunlap & Associates, an integrated marketing service and promotional merchandise company right here in Irvine, California. Rob, welcome to Critical Mass.
Thank you, Doug.
We're glad to have you here. I've enjoyed the time we spent together getting ready for the show, and I'm sure you got lots of great information to share today.
I hope so.
We all do. Rob, let's start out by tell the audience about your path to Vail Dunlap & Associates.
Well, this is in the early 80s. I was working in the construction business, actually, selling paint and wall covering, and what I really wanted to do was be in my own business. And I did not, you know, I have a degree in history and philosophy from University of Colorado, so I didn't know anything about business, but I knew that nobody was going to pay me I didn't know what I was worth, but that wasn't the issue. I just didn't think anybody would pay me what I wanted to make, so I knew I had to go into business for myself, and I started looking around for companies, and Vail and Dunlap had started the company in the late 70s, and they were a little bit older, and it was obvious they were going to retire in the next few years. So I went to work for them with the idea of taking over the company when they retired, and they did so in, like I said, in the mid to late 80s, and my partner and I, Ray Wharton, bought them out, and I've been running the company since 1988.
Boy, that's amazing. So you joined the company in about 85, and you and Ray bought it out in 88. Do you remember offhand when the company started?
Yeah, it started in 79. So this is actually its 30th year in business, which for Orange County, we're one of the oldest promotional products companies in Orange County, and that's Orange County's a new place, so.
Well, 30 years in business is an old business by any standards, and you've seen a lot of different environments and a lot of different times. So tell us a little bit about what Vail Dunlap is.
Well, our core business is promotional products. Any item that we can put a logo on, from, you know, pens, coffee cups, calendars. About a third of our business is some kind of wearable. Shirts, golf shirts, jackets, caps, those are generally embroidered or silkscreen. So that's our core business, but we also get involved with anything to promote, you know, small, medium-sized, and large businesses, which can include direct mail, and it can include fulfillment services. It can include, we've done video production, all generally as part of some integrated program that did include promotional products, incentive programs, or rebate programs, things along that line.
So, Rob, the impression I got in us talking, I mean, my first impression was that you do promotional products or merchandise, but then the more and more we talk, the more I begin to realize that you really provide more of a marketing service for promotion rather than just product. Is that right?
Yes, people come to us and Well, some people come to us and say, Rob, I need 500 caps. Okay, fine. Here's a good cap. We'll do it this way. But most of our clients come to us and say, Rob, I'm introducing a new product at, you know, this upcoming trade show, and I need some ideas on how to get people to come by our booth to look at our new product or service. I need an idea on how to motivate my salespeople to up their sales by 15%. I need some ideas on how to take B customers and turn them into A customers without expanding my sales force. So they come to us with marketing, sales and marketing problems, and we come back to them with creative solutions that and generally our solutions incorporate some promotional product or gift or incentive of some kind.
Okay. And you just said something that kind of triggered me. I was thinking promotional in the sense of for customers, but you're talking actually for internal use also, like salespeople.
Absolutely. We do a lot with sales incentive programs and sales award programs. Also, human resources. You know, the bigger companies and medium-sized companies reward people based on longevity. So after 5 years, you might get a choice between, you know, a watch and a pen set or a clock, and at 10 years, you know, a bigger clock and a nicer watch and right up the line. So there's a lot of different parts of corporations that use our products, but the key word is promotion. We're helping people promote some aspect of their business internally or externally.
Okay. Good. I'm glad you clarified that. Well, you know, one of the questions that we like to ask all our guests, and frankly, it's my favorite question because the answers are just totally fascinating, is what particular experience or key lesson have you learned in your years of business that has really helped you?
Well, there's a couple things come to mind. In sales, there is no shortcut. But if there is a shortcut, it is networking, especially when you're in a business-to-business environment like mine. And if you can effectively reach out and access your network, that can really, really be a shortcut to getting to the top. And a lot of networking going on online now, but a lot of it's not very effective. The key components to effective networking is to, A, reach out to everybody that you know that can help promote your company, whether it's, you know, your church, your bowling club, I don't care. Everybody you know needs to know that you want more business and that you want them to help you get it. Number two is those people that are going to be doing that networking for you need to be educated about what you do. And so you've got to not just tell them one time, but you've got to educate them and re-educate them. And don't assume just because somebody's nodding their head that they have any idea what you're talking about. I've found that it takes three times of explaining what I do before somebody really gets it. And then when somebody does get around to giving you a lead, you need to reward that person. And you need to reward that person's behavior, not the quality of the lead. If you don't hear anything else today, I'd encourage your listening audience to take heed of that, because they cannot control the quality of the lead. All they can do is control their behavior. And so you want to reinforce that behavior and get people giving you more referrals. So, and by rewarding that, I mean a handwritten note. I personally, my handwriting's so bad, I don't write very many handwritten notes, but I'll write a letter and then a handwritten PS, and I might include, in my case, I'd include a gift with something with my logo on it, you can graduate these gifts up. It should always be a gift and not a bribe, but as you'll find, there's a handful of people out there, I call them gatekeepers, that can refer you a tremendous amount of business, and you want to get to be those people's best friend. And so this is how we have built our businesses, through a networking, but we've really thought through the process about what really works, and if you use these techniques consistently and persistently, you will find that your business will continue to grow. You'll lose accounts like everybody does, but you'll replace them faster than you're losing them.
And you know, one of the things that, you know, when somebody says networking, I think of the typical dinner meeting and collecting as many business cards as you can. But in my discussions with you, I tend to use the word relationship building more than networking. Is that, that's really what you're all about, isn't it?
Yes. Though I have nothing against those networking groups and those dinners. I've been to many of them. But they are only going to work if the people, A, understand, really understand and have it in their brain what you're doing, what your business is all about. And then once they do refer you, that it's reinforced, and also that you're a referral source for them. And so you need to be having, like you say, a relationship with these people and getting it in your hand to help you can, how you can help them promote their business. And then when they go to say thank you, say, well, just send me a lead. That's how you can thank me the best. And these, most of these networking that goes on is superficial.
Yeah.
And it's not real in-depth relationship building, and that's why it's not effective.
Now, you know, you mentioned that there were a couple of key lessons, and the one was get as close as you can to your customer, but you also talked a little bit about bringing products and services from outside the traditional industry. You want to touch on that a little?
Yes. I think, you know, people in my business all can call on the same or very similar sources. Anybody in my business can sell you a good baseball cap. They can sell you a cross pen. They can sell you a nice leather portfolio. Like I said previously, how those products are used in a creative fashion can make all the difference in the world. But I also think we've got to reach and develop new products. I've got one on my desk right now, and I stumbled on this through a referral, through this networking process, and a friend of mine brought it to my attention that every screen of every cell phone, GPS, computer, television screen comes with fine print in the instructions saying not to use traditional cleaners on the screen, that alcohol and glycol-based cleaners can get down and destroy the electronics. And there, I stumbled across the one cleaner in the nation that meets all the criteria that won't, it's a gel-based thing. It's nothing that exotic, but it just is designed so it won't damage your electronics. And I went and contacted the people that, you know, that had the rights to this and had developed it, and I cut a deal with them to bring it into our industry so that we now will get the product and imprint the cloth, one of the microfiber cleaning cloths that come with it, or the container itself, and start offering this to our customers. And it's a very timely thing. We have a lot of clients in the consumer electronics industry. We've been very, very well received by that element. And this is something nobody else can show them. So they stop perceiving you just as, you know, the guy that can sell me baseball caps, and they start perceiving you as a creative resource. And the more you can do that, the closer you can get to being not a vendor to that company, but an integral part of that company's marketing program.
Excellent, excellent. Get to know your customer. You touched on the internet a little bit. How has it affected your business?
Well, you know, the internet is here to stay. It's evolving as opposed to happening overnight. I know during the height of the dot-com craze 10 years ago, somebody told me that there wouldn't be one mall left in America in 10 years, and I said that they needed to meet my wife before they made that prediction. But the internet is here to stay. It is not going to replace other medium. You know, when radio came in, they said it would be the end of newspapers, and then when television came in, they said it would be the end of radio, and they're all three still there. The role they play has changed, and same thing with the internet. The it will play an ever larger part in marketing our product. And we have spent huge amounts of money on our website, particularly the part, the search engine part, so that our customers and prospects can go on there, and it can be a user-friendly tool for looking for ideas and product. And that, I think, is the first step. Then, you know, as you get closer with the clients, you might develop their own online store, for instance, where somebody will go on and order products with their, these are big corporations, of course, order product with their logo on it through a website that you're actually hosting. And it's pretty much endless where this thing is evolving. But it is evolving. It's not. There's still a lot of traditional business that does not go through the Internet, and it's my job to make sure we're getting as much of both as we can.
Now, it sounds like you are using the Internet as a delivery vehicle. You can order product, you can review product, and so forth. Are you using the Internet in any way? You and I were talking a few minutes ago about social media before we got on the air. Are you using it in any way to reach out and touch customers initially?
Yes, we do. And this is something that's kind of new to us. We're starting to do e-blast with targeted marketing for... But you really... It's got to be highly targeted, and it's got to be... well thought through, because there's just so much of it. My gosh, I get, Doug, how many emails do you get a day? 200, 300?
Yeah, about 150.
Yeah, and to get through the clutter, there's one or two things you can do. You've got to have something that's so compelling that it grabs somebody's attention, you know, free television, click here or something. Or it's got to be so... it's got to be targeted to a friendly audience, somebody that knows who you are. And we have an extensive program where we ask people's buy-in to receive, say once a week promotions from us. That's one of the keys to this, is don't abuse it. You know, don't be bombarding people with stuff. Send them something once in a while. Make sure it's of real value, you know, that there's a real discount there, there's a real saving, there's a real special something. And maintain your credibility so that when they get that e-blast from Vail Dunlap or from whoever, they say, okay, this, they have credibility with me. This is going to be worth my time to click on this and take a quick look at it. So there's that. And then, of course, social networking that LinkedIn, I think, is the most common one among business people. I'm still trying to figure out exactly how big a role that's going to play, but it's definitely going to play a role, and it's been playing an increasingly larger role, especially among the young people. And that's where, you know, I'm in my mid-50s, Doug, I think you're a little younger than I am, but we're raised in the 60s and early 70s, and our generation is not as tuned into this technology as people under 35. And yet people under 35, we now have to do business with, we have to sell to them, we have to deal with them. And so we've got to be really tuned in to those differences and learn how to, that intergenerational communication needs to work.
You know, you mentioned to me, Rob, you made a statement, and I'd like you to just share it with our listeners. You said, the more you're a resource, the less the Internet resellers can affect your business. You want to talk about that for a second?
Well, where the Internet is going to be huge is when somebody wants a commodity. That's why Amazon has done so well. When somebody wants this DVD or that book or whatever, and Amazon, I'm really glad that they made it, because they can stock, you know, hundreds of thousands of titles, whereas you go to a regular bookstore and they can stock thousands of titles. So it's a perfect application there. But if you want something that's creative, if you want an idea, if you want somebody to solve your marketing problem, that is not a commodity, and that's something you're never going to be able to buy off the Internet. And so if you want to maintain a relationship-based business, the Internet is never going to replace that, you know, person-to-person touch. It might facilitate the relationship. It might become an integral part of the relationship, but it'll never replace it. And I think that's, for me, that's the business I want to be in. I am not a commodity trader.
Okay. And, you know, in case our audience hasn't guessed it, which is a joke, you know, you obviously have a sales and marketing background. So, you know, how has that really benefited you as a business owner?
Well, we're a distribution business. We represent hundreds of companies, don't manufacture anything. So that's been, you know, that this is just what I've always done. And I've got a business where I can really just focus in on that. You've got to understand manufacturing, and you've got to understand your product lines that you represent from a technical point of view. But that's, in my case, that's not all that complicated. So you know, it doesn't matter how good a product you have if you can't sell it. And they say, you know, the best product is not always the best seller. All my techno nerd friends swear up and down that Apple is a better operating system than DOS was, or Microsoft's product. And yet, look who has taken over the whole world of PCs. It's Microsoft, because they went out and sold it. So that's what I'm always going to be focused on.
Now, you know, one of the challenges that lots of business owners face is they come to the business with a particular expertise. I mean, they are the key designer, the key architect, or the sales and marketing guru, the guy who brings the meat to the table, and they struggle with the operational side of the business. How did you handle that? Does your partner fit into that?
Well, that's where I've been really blessed. My partner is really the opposite personality type of. In fact, it's extreme. You know, I'm perceived as being the typical sales guy that slap on the back, drink in his hand, and a joke. And Ray, my partner, is Mr. Detail, anal retentive, hasn't heard a joke he got in 10 years kind of guy. In fact, they call us the Felix and Oscar of the promotional products business. It really is a very extreme relationship. But he is great at all the detail and follow-up and administrative, and I've been blessed to be able to turn that over to him. You know, I mean, to go into a three-hour meeting to figure out which copier you're going to buy, I'd blow my brains out before I did that. So, we've been very fortunate in that regard.
That's you have a true blessing there. I think one of the key things about partnerships is if you can bring different talents to the table, then it
you
makes
do.
For a lasting partnership.
You do. And the other thing, you have to have complementary talents. You've got to respect each other. You don't have to like each other. You have to respect each other. If you like each other, that's a plus. But you have to respect each other. And then you have to have compatible goals that, you know, to where you're pulling in the same direction. Maybe not exactly the same goals, but compatible goals. If one person wants to retire next year and the other person wants to build, you know, something big over the next 20 years, you got a problem there, because those are you're going to run your business very differently based on those two agendas. But Ray and I have been very fortunate in that we're about the same age, we have compatible goals, and we have complementary skills, and we respect each other. We drive each other crazy sometimes, but we respect each other.
Sounds like a marriage.
It's, you know what? There's a lot of similarities. Wife and my partner out of the same room as much as possible. I don't want them comparing notes.
You know, when you and I were talking last week or so, you talked about the concept of hitting a home run in a customer relationship. Do you want to, you know, I was intrigued by that. You want to share with the audience what you mean by a home run in terms of customer relationships?
Well, the great joy to me of having a career in sales and marketing is that you're dealing with people, and you have, and when you're dealing at my level with, you know, big budgets and large companies, and it's not just a quick sale in and out. You really are working with these people, and to develop friendships with people that you're doing business with, where I have friends that have retired, and are gone out of business that I'm still in touch with on a regular basis because we've become very close friends. And when they did business with me, I've had people give me purchase orders, six-figured, you know, purchase orders without even asking me what the price was, because they knew I was going to give them a fair price, and they knew I was going to get it there, and they knew it was going to be right. And that's a home run. When you have that level of rapport with somebody, not only is it, you know, obviously good for business, but it's a very satisfying way to spend your career, to have relationships like that. And I've been blessed with more than a couple of those.
And, you know, you also mentioned that sometimes you have the ability to identify a product or something that addresses a problem for a class of clients that others really can't do. What, you well, have any examples of that kind of thing?
Yeah, my favorite example is it was brought to my attention just almost accidentally. This is several years ago, that this one new ink that had just come out on the market by one of our the companies we represent was chemically different than ballpoint pen ink. And so these people that engage in check washing, for your listeners that don't know what that is, this is like that movie Catch Me If You Can, that people get a hold of your checks and they use chemicals to wash off your name and the amount, and they put their name and a higher amount in and go cash the check. And this pen did not respond to the chemicals these people use. So if you use this pen writing your checks, you would thwart this. So I took that pen and packaged it up with a card explaining all this and positioned it as not as just a pen that just coincidentally had this different kind of ink in it, but as an anti-theft device, and marketed this to financial institutions and all kinds of people. Actually bought it. One of the biggest markets for it was turned out to be the marketing. Anybody was marketing to seniors, because seniors are the targets of a lot of these con artists, and they really respond to this. But we sold, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of these pens when nobody else, anybody could have gotten this technology. It wasn't exotic technology, but we were just came up with the idea, and got to the market first, and we sold hundreds of thousands of them. And now Parker and all kinds of people have come out with them, and it's become a staple. But that's you got to keep your ear to the ground. You know what? I love the story about Art Fry at 3M. I think a lot of people have heard this story, where he was trying to develop this super adhesive, but he also wanted to come up with a way to mark the hymns in the hymnal at church. And this super adhesive he had come up with, well, it didn't work. He goes, oh my gosh, you can take this paper off and put it right back on. This isn't a super adhesive. And then he remembered marking the hymnal at church, and he made up a batch of these post-it notes, and one of them got to the president of 3M's desk, and he asked his secretary for more, and she said, well, there are no more. Art Fry just made up a batch of these, and that's the last of them. And he goes, oh, no, there's going to be more of these. There's going to be a lot more of these. And the point is, Art Fry saw the potential that was in front of him. Here was something, you know, it was a mistake. It didn't work in terms of what, but he saw the potential of it. And all of us, on a regular basis, I believe, have opportunities in front of us, and we don't see them. And I really try to keep my eyes open. I don't want to be, the guy that just throws the glue in the trash because it wasn't a super glue.
You know, and this is a question that always fascinates me. I mean, we hear of these success stories, but, you know, the most amazing thing is that if you follow these success stories, it seems that it's the same people all the time are the ones that are finding unique ways to apply products or services. Do you have any kind of training? What do you do with your people so that they're on the lookout for these kinds of things?
Oh boy, that you've asked a tough question. There is, you cannot train this. People have it or they don't. You can all I've been able to do is to sensitize people to the idea. But I'll be very honest with you. I have found winners in this regard. I have very rarely developed them. It's something people kind of either get or they don't. And I wish I had a better answer for you than that, Doug, but I don't.
Well, you know, I asked this question to one person, and his response to me was kind of interesting, and I'd like to get your reaction. He said, you know, you can encourage this kind of behavior by creating an environment that allows your people to fail. And what he was saying was that you're not going to get any breakthrough ideas if you aren't willing to suffer through 10 losses or failures for each one great idea. And many companies don't allow that kind of attitude. How would you classify your company in that regard?
Well, we very much encourage experimentation and encourage people to try new things. Now, what happens when we bring people new on, a lot of them try to do the same old things that didn't work over again, and we'll sensitize them to that. Because we all go through these learning curves. But yeah, I totally agree with whoever you're talking to. You've got to, and the vast majority, I've shared with you a few of my success stories, but I have 8 loser stories for every success story, I guarantee you. I mean, this would have to be an 8-hour radio program for me to go over all the failures I have had, but success only comes out of failure. And you've got to have that environment and pick yourself up, and when you have a failure, pick yourself up and you keep going. It's critical.
You know, Rob, one of the things, you know that, you know, Rick and I, our primary business is really putting together forums and groups of CEOs that kind of share and work with each other. One of the things that fascinates me, and I'd like to hear from you, is you've had a very long-term, very successful partnership with Ray.
Right.
How do you handle issues when you don't agree and see eye to eye? What's been the secret? Because to me, that's the secret of making it work, is how do you handle the difficult times?
Well, we have always run our partnership, our decision-making process, on a veto basis. If we're considering doing something, we both have got to agree to go along with it. If one of us really doesn't want to do it, then we don't do it. I think that is a good starting point, because that way, if you do something, you're both signed on for it, and you both believe in it. One might believe in it more than the other. This happens many times with us, but we're both on board with it, and that's your starting place. The other thing is, and this has been a challenge for Ray and I, is you've got to really keep the lines of communication open. This is where it's like a marriage, you know, because we are so different. It sometimes, you know, I know if I have to go into a meeting with him, I know I could tell you what he's going to say. I could write you a script, you know, what he's going to say to me. And I just want to say, look, here's the script. Just go to the end here where you agree with me. Well, it doesn't work that way, you know. You have to keep the lines of communication open, and then you've got to fight for what you believe in and respect the other person. And then once a decision's made, though, you got to put it behind you, not brood about it. So I'll tell you, though, when you said it's like a marriage, you're absolutely right. It can be, and there's times when it's just tough.
Interesting. One of the questions I'd like to ask you before we start to wrap up here is that where do you see your industry going? And what I'm alluding to here is that, you know, the reason we were talking to you is because you're an Orange County-based industry and a company, and that you're the biggest probably and the longest in the county in this business. But your business isn't really confined to Orange County at all.
Oh, no. We have clients in New York and the East Coast, and we've got clients in Georgia, and we have an office in Georgia, we have an office up in Oregon. But with the internet and with the communication and FedEx and everything, you don't have to do business locally anymore. You can do it nationally and even internationally. We've actually done some business overseas. But I see, I see the core of what we're doing the same. Stay close to the customers, stay close to what their needs are, and constantly be looking for new and innovative ways to meet those needs. How you go about doing that, obviously, is going to change with technology, but the core concept is not going to change. And I see, at least for the rest of my career, that's what our company will be all about.
Rob, and I mean this in a very complimentary way, you are a great storyteller. And in our talks, I've enjoyed some of the stories that you've shared that were maybe not really for the air, but what is your best success story of what you've done over the years with the company? Do you have one particular one that you want to share with us?
Well, I'll tell you a fun one. It was during the last, and I was thinking about it today because we're in a recession. And during the first recession, notice Ray and I took over the company in '88, and their recession came immediately. We didn't have the means to handle it, and I had $250,000 Swiss Army knife order, but I did not have anywhere near that kind of credit with Swiss Army. In fact, I owed them money with I owed them receivables maybe pushing 90 days. So I called the vice president up of Swiss Army and said, listen, you bill this directly and then just rebate me my percentage of it. And he says, no, there's another distributor in there bidding against you, and if I do that, he'll be all ticked off. So I called the customer up and I said, look, whoever you give this to, you're going to need a sample. Send me the artwork and I'll get going on a sample for you. So I got the sample and I sent it into the vice president. We got the artwork and I sent it into the vice president and sort of implied that I already had the order and make up a pre-production proof for me. And by the next day, they had produced this proof and I called them up and I said, okay, the proof's going to get approved tomorrow. How do you want to finance this? You want to give me $250,000 worth of credit or you want to bill it? How are you doing it? And he hung up the phone, wouldn't even talk to me, but he had his vice president, his sales manager, call me back, and he said, Rob, we'll do this any way you want to, pal. This is a great order. So you got to be creative on every aspect of business. You've got to work every angle you can, especially during a recession. But we spent the next 20 years making sure we were never in that position again. And if we have the resources now, if I sent a $250,000 order to Swiss Army, they wouldn't even call. They would just process it. So anyway, I hope that...
That's exactly the kind of story I was looking for. You know, I mean, we can talk about all the skills, all the management techniques and everything else, but sometimes it just boils down to have the guts to go forth boldly and follow your beliefs.
You got it. You got it. You got to take the bull by the horns once in a while.
Rob, is there anything else about you or your organization that we haven't talked about today that you would like to share with our listeners?
Nothing particularly comes to mind. I just think the one thing that we've tried to do that's a little unique with our salespeople, because we're basically a sales organization. I've got 13 salespeople out there beating the bushes every day. And we try to look at our salespeople as our partners, not just as the salespeople. And they're on straight commission, so if they want to go out and make more money than I do, they're welcome to do it. And I think that has been a powerful... There's times when I didn't, you know, when... You know, you just want to start ordering people around, but that really doesn't work. You've got to treat your salespeople with respect. You've got to work with them, and you got to listen to them, and they got to listen to you, of course. That's got to work both ways. But that has been a productive. We've had very good longevity. People come to work here; they don't jump ship. They they feel that, you know. They don't. That doesn't mean things don't happen that they're unhappy about, but once in a while. But we've created that relationship with them, like we've tried to do with our customers. It's been successful, and I've noticed that's fairly rare, and a lot of companies don't view their salespeople that way.
Oh yeah, it is. It is, and it's a shame that more people don't have that attitude. Tell me a little bit about your PeerNet relationship.
Well, PeerNet is a organization of companies like mine around the country, and we have banded together to share technology, to do joint purchasing and joint importing, and develop, particularly when I say technology, particularly our web-based technology, which is extremely expensive. And so we have a much better website than we would have if we had developed it on our own. We have a much better catalog than if we had developed our own, much better purchasing power. And the biggest part of it is the knowledge here. And, of course, your organization, I know, does this. When you get your peers in the same room for an afternoon or a week or whatever it is and can really start opening up and sharing in a safe environment, some really miraculous things can happen. And the PeerNet's been invaluable to Ray and I in that regard.
That's great. Before we just sign off here for you, how does someone get in touch with you or learn more about your firm?
You can check out our website at www.vaildunlap.com, V as in Victor, A-I-L, D-U-N-L-A-P, or email me directly, rob@vaildunlap.com. That's R-O-B as in boy, @vaildunlap.com.
Rob, thank you very much for being with us today. It's been a lot of fun, and it's been very educational, and I appreciate you taking the time to share with
thank
our
you,
listeners.
Doug. All righty.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. You know, one of the things that he mentioned there is really the success of how to work with his partners, the success of how to have an alliance with other people in his industry. And that's what Rick and I are all about. That's what Critical Mass is all about, is putting business executives together in an environment, whether it's in a monthly forum meeting or whether it's our radio show, to be able to share knowledge and learning with one another. And, I want to just remind you, in case you don't know, that last year Rick wrote the definitive book on CEO peer groups. It has the same title as this radio show, Critical Mass, and I would highly recommend that you add it to your reading list. You can, of course, find it on Amazon like you can find anything else in the world. Just put in Rick Franzi under the author, that's F-R-A-N-Z-I, and it'll take you right to it. And I hope that you also have the opportunity to visit Rick and I on our website, www.criticalmassforbusiness, that's forbusiness.com, where you can learn more about our executive peer groups, about our coaching that we offer our clients. I'm a master certified coach and past president of the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation. And we just would like to have an opportunity to chat with you and see if there's something we can do with you. So we would appreciate the chance to get to know you better. And if you'd be interested in being on our radio show, drop us a line, and, hey, we'd love to talk. So this is Doug Gefeller signing off for Critical Mass. We've enjoyed having you with us today. Thank you very much, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week.
You're listening to Critical Max with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller, only on LA Talk Radio.